Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Many people in our food community have been seriously impacted by Superstorm Sandy, and our hearts go out to them. At HRN, we've been covering these stories since the storm hit. To learn more, visit our website at www.heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy, and this week we're talking all about turkey. It is officially here, the holidays, and we've got a couple of ladies who I'm so excited because they're probably like two of the most pedigreed food writers, culinary experts and food stylists, photographers too. And they have a new book out called Canal House Cooks Every Day. We've got Melissa Hamilton and Christopher Hirschheimer. How are you?
Hi, Kathy.
We're good. Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Are you at the Canal House right now?
We are. We're in the very place.
My favorite place to be.
Yeah. So tell me, so you have this beautiful series of books called Canal House Cooks, or the Canal House, right?
Canal House Cooking. Cooking series.
And it's a quarter or thrice annual cookbook series, right?
Exactly. We wish we haven't quite, whether it's thricest, but it's three times a year.
Okay.
And yeah.
So I know that both of you have been, actually Christopher is a co-founder of Saveur magazine, and Melissa also worked there for a while. You've both worked throughout the, and written, you know, for numerous magazines as well. So throughout food media, it sounds like you've been there, really been around the block. What made you decide to go on and, you know, obviously do your own thing, but what made you decide to do this format of the series of thrice annual, whatever, thricely books?
Yeah, three times a year. And each book is, it has a connection to the season in which it's coming out. So we do a winter, spring, and then we do a summer related book, and then we do a fall holiday related book, and it is so much how we cook. We're always reacting to the seasons. I know this is where, and Christopher's going to finish my sentence for me, please.
Oh, okay, I will. We're sort of across the room for each other, so we're not looking at each other. But, you know, why did we start this? I mean, we start this because we're food mad, and we photograph other people's cookbooks and have worked with other people and have written about food and been in the magazine world for years, sort of saying what's the newest, the hottest, the latest, the best. And we just decided that we were always cooking and we were always talking about food. And also, you know, we're home cooks.
Right.
And so we face just what everybody else faces. You know, we're leaving the studio at 7 o'clock at night, racing home to cook for our families.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything in the fridge? Or what do we do? Or when we're flying into the store to look at everything to grab something. We also are more considered, and when we decide we want to cook, you know, do a big shopping or cook for a holiday, we're home cooks, and
right.
So we're not chefs, and we don't have sous chefs, and we don't have professional kitchens. So we sort of thought we had a common
a
dilemma
right now.
You know,
you're not wearing a toque right now, and have the whole like chef's like monogrammed jacket. No, I'm just kidding.
We don't have no tattoos either.
I can't. Yeah, I don't get that essence from your writing as well. So obviously, I know that I'm interrupting something delicious that is in the works right now. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're cooking today?
Well, it's actually so perfect for this time. Well, it's, of course it is, but it's this roasted pumpkin soup with pimenton, and it is. We say that when food has a lot of life force energy, we say it's got a lot of prana. And this soup, we just had big bowls of it, and it's silky, smooth, and it's just the most gorgeous orange color. Mm. And it's and then you get a little bit of that smoke from the pimenton.
And that sounds great.
And we slipped a preserved lemon in there too. So we're always looking for ways to get, you know, salt. Mm-hmm. Into food, sometimes salt, sometimes sweet, but not just using regular salt and regular sugar, you know, to add those depths of flavor.
That's really cool. What kind of pumpkin did you use for this one?
Oh, well, actually we used various. We used the beautiful Cinderella pumpkins, a Hubbard, and also just those gorgeous butternut squash. We love those. You know, they're sort of ubiquitous, but they're not too watery, you know, and they do have a just what Melissa was saying.
Huh, sounds
silky.
Like you must have made a giant pot of soup with all those. I'm imagining
good.
Like four, just one of those Cinderella squashes makes enough food for me for like 2 weeks. So,
So we've got some in the freezer, and
we'll be so glad.
We've made a big pot of it, and we sent some. And yesterday we made a big pot, and so we sent some people, friends of ours, with quarts of it home. So you're
great.
Right. It does. It does give you a lot.
Yeah, but
in both ways.
That's a cool idea, though, to mix different squashes. And so, you know, when you're left with all these leftover different squashes, that could be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm imagining I might be soon, too. I really appreciated your recipe in the new Canal House Cooks Every Day for kabocha squash pie. And you advocate for using this instead of pumpkin, which I've always felt like other squashes were better for pumpkin pie than actual pumpkin myself. And the recipe sounds just delicious, and it looks perfect. Very, very rich and creamy.
Well, you know, those squashes, I think they just weren't available. You know, now we have all the heirlooms that are out there, but it used to be that you just had the can of Libby's.
So it wasn't so much a misconception, it was just a lack of availability. And it's true, we do see a lot of kabocha squash here now and then, and I don't know, it's exciting. I love this huge spread in your book all about Thanksgiving and the turkey. Tell us, because I know you have, I read it, you advocate for doing a dry salt brine on the turkey. Instead of doing the wet brine with a huge, you know,
hot
like vat of water that you have to keep cold overnight or for days.
Yeah.
So that sounds easier.
Much easier. And yeah, and you don't have the big pot of water that's sloshing all over, and you're either leaving it in the great outdoor refrigerator, hoping that the temperature stays cold, or you've cleaned out your refrigerator right at a time that you need every single bit of space in your refrigerator for all the other things that you're going to be cooking.
Okay, so this recipe says basically to rub the turkey with salt and let it sort of cure. Is it curing? Is it making it especially the meat very salty?
Mm-mm. No, not too salty.
No, not very salty. Mm-mm. It's just seasoning it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're only using 3 tablespoons of kosher salt over the whole turkey.
Mm-hmm. And why 3 or 4 days? Because I was like, oh, shoot, I better start right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because it sort of slowly, you know, has to penetrate the skin, and then it just slowly goes in, so it gives it this time to get, you know, flavored internally. And it also, you know, one of the lovely things about brining is that it, because of the salt inside, it's holding more moisture. So it not only flavors the meat, but it is making the meat more moist and juicy.
Okay, well then, yeah, that is a good trick. I'm always afraid that somehow salting too early is going to dry out my meat. Is that totally?
Well, you're in. Remember, you're wrapping this like we wrap it in plastic wrap, but not really. You know, in fact, there's all that delicious Chinese way of taking ducks and birds, and roasting. They kind of leave them out in the cold, in the wind. And that, it dries the skin out. It's not drying the meat out, but it dries that skin out, and you end up with a beautiful, crisp skin on, you know, on ducks or birds or turkeys. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think it, you know, you do see here of people, they do this dry brine, and they'll leave pork roasts or turkeys. They'll go, you know, 5 days.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm sure, you know, I'll take your word for it. You've done it. You've tested it. It sounds like you've tested a lot of different ways of doing turkey. So that sounds good to me.
Do you typically do you brine your birds? Are you a briner?
I've been known to be a briner in the past. However, I tried a heritage turkey the last couple of years, and I find them, I just wanted to taste them, you know, just taste the difference. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do that. And I got to hear from Heritage Foods. And yeah, it was interesting. It was different. My mom didn't like it because she thought it looked skinny and weird.
Yeah, it's hard coming off of a nice big plump.
Yeah.
A big old butterball, right?
Exactly. And I read in your book that you have a little tradition of doing a Friendsgiving, as I call it, because I have that tradition too. But you had a Thanksgiving-like feast with friends and colleagues and so forth before.
Oh, yeah.
Are you doing that again this year?
Yes, we are, because it's so much fun. We call it a Thanksgiving with no tears, because usually, you know, there's always some family dynamic that sends someone running up the stairs, slamming the door. So this way, we just invite everybody to come, and they can bring whatever horrid thing they grew up eating, you know, if it had Jello and nuts in it.
And
fruit cocktail.
If they didn't have it for Thanksgiving, then they would. It wouldn't be Thanksgiving for them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah,
that's actually an interesting point. Did you grow up eating things that weren't as good as you'd like them to be? So you wanted to improve food, or did you just have a really great food chef cooking? I don't know what I'm saying. family.
Yeah. For me, I couldn't stand stuffing. Because it was so just bready and doughy,
mushy,
and soggy and tasteless. I couldn't stand it.
Mm-hmm. How did
and
you
I
feel about that?
I couldn't stand Brussels
stuffing.
Sprouts. But, boy, do we make good stuffings. And now, you know, the Brussels sprouts, even frozen ones, believe it or not, can be good.
But we grew up, I think your mom didn't like turkey, did
No, we didn't even have turkey. I had to go to my grandfather's house, and it was his favorite holiday, and so he'd always have a big turkey.
But my grandmother was we always had a big, fabulous Thanksgiving. I'm not, you know, just delicious, everything. I'm still basically cooking my grandmother's Thanksgiving dinner.
Wow.
Almost all the way, yeah. And
How about that chiffon, that pumpkin chiffon?
Oh, Melissa, you're right. That we make a pumpkin chiffon here, and we channel my grandmother. And, you know, it's very old-fashioned dessert, a pumpkin chiffon. But it's light as a feather, and when you're just filled to the gills with Thanksgiving dinner, you can always find room for a little piece of a pumpkin chiffon pie with a big spoonful, a dollop of just whipped cream, and it's just like angelic clouds in your mouth.
It sounds like it. And I really like that word, chiffon. That sounds beautiful. I mean, all your recipes here look beautiful, and I'm sure a lot of them would make just the perfect Thanksgiving side dishes. I wanted to ask a slightly off Thanksgiving question, though, before I forget. Mm-hmm. And that is, what would you say, you can answer separately, would be the ultimate date meal, in your opinion? The most date-worthy, romantic, luscious, love-worthy meal?
You're way off topic.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, let me start and see if you can't think. Well, oysters to begin with.
Okay.
Delicious, delicious oysters. Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, champagne and oysters to begin with. And, I don't know. Are we really getting crazy? I mean, we're crazy about foie gras. Maybe you'd have something.
Okay.
All those lusciousness. And I'm
very
trying
classic.
To think of... Yeah, and you'd have to have chocolate to end.
Chocolate, okay.
What, Emmy?
Can we double date?
Let's double date. Let's you and me.
Date.
We'll just eat a nice meal.
That sounds great. Nobody has ever answered double date. So I have this. I'm basically taking an informal poll, and every guest out of the 100 or some has answered this question very differently. It's very interesting. So
yeah,
a double date does sound like a fun way to lighten things up a little bit. So. Hey, I'm into
yes,
it.
And there's more food that way.
Exactly. You overmake, and then everybody gets to eat more.
Yes.
So, let me see. I also wanted to get into more about this cookbook, which just came out, The Canal House Cooks. It is such a hefty book, and it's just one of those beautiful books with like the ribbon placeholder for the pages, and it's arranged by seasons. So did you come up with this book as a sort of, the epitome of what you're doing with your, like a one volume, really like essential cookbook that has a thorough cache of recipes throughout the year, as opposed to the quarterly or thricely magazine series?
Well, you know, we do cook every day, and we post. We have a subscription. You can subscribe, and we send a little picture and a caption of what we made, you know, for lunch here. Sometimes it's almost more like a dinner, but, you know, we will eat our big meal in the day. And, you know, it sort of grew, this big book grew out of what we cooked every day. And the series right now, we're doing a year in Italy.
Mm.
So really, this is, it isn't the Bible. It's not our Bible, but it's what we actually do,
gotcha.
What we did for a year. And there's so much good food, and it truly is a reaction, our reaction, to when we go in the store and we see tomatoes in the summer, strawberries in the early summer. We just had that experience with Brussels sprouts. We walked into our farm market, and there we see the teeniest little tiny Brussels sprouts. And then we just made a whole meal around the Brussels sprouts, you know,
yeah.
Because you're so turned on with what you see. It's always a reaction to, delicious food that we find, seasonal food that we find. And then we go home and cook it. So we're into, home cooking and seasonal home cooking. And we just want people to cook every day.
Right.
Just even if it's a piece of toast, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's always a start for everything. And
yeah.
And I understand you have a little, do you have like a garden as well at the Canal House?
Oh.
Well, on our balcony, which is a narrow balcony, we've got enough depth on that to have pots, lots of pots of things, and then also the flower boxes, which are filled with herbs and... we've got thyme that's now, what, 3-4 years old. It winters mm-hmm. over. There's rosemary that is 2 feet
oh,
tall
wow.
and blooming.
Oh, wonderful.
It's we have tomatoes that spill out. We had figs. We had figs. We had the most delicious, perfect fig just before the frost, towards the end of the season, that we picked, and it was perfectly ripe. So we do. We have... what else do we grow? We do, and nasturtiums spill out, and...
yeah, I see nasturtiums in the photos. They look
yeah.
great.
Mm-hmm. With lemon, and we then, have lemon trees, and...
Oh, yeah,
we,
with grapefruit.
We pull those we have, in.
Yeah. yeah.
And
we
these
do.
Are...
We have big grapefruits mm-hmm. on our tree right now, and then we have Meyer lemons that are green, but coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and our studio is just filled with light. And that, and it's along the canal. So we mm-hmm. have this, you know, the afternoon light just pours in, and yeah, it's wonderful for. It's kind of amazing what we can grow in that very narrow space. We also have gardens at home at our, mm-hmm. you know, each of us has garden, and so for bigger things, potatoes or eggplant or you know, beans and all of that. So we're. You know, that's a sort of a wonderful thing. In the morning, we're out there gathering something, and we'll bring it down to the studio and augment it with what we've got growing on the balcony.
I like that, so. And you can really tell from the ingredients that these are the actual ingredients that you ate and that you cooked and that you, well, some of them, it looks like,
mm-hmm.
You
oh,
grew.
It is.
I mean, there's radishes here with the dirt, and I see some leafy greens, maybe from the cauliflower with... conspicuous bites from little insects, you know, those little, just a
exactly.
little pretty like lace-like effect.
Very real. And also, you know, that's the thing that it's just, you know, someone will bring something in mm. or, you know, or nothing's growing. So we're at, even, you know, at the supermarket or what have you, just see something like this beautiful cavolo nero right now. And
a tub of marrow, you said? Sorry?
Yes. Cavolo nero.
Oh, I thought you said a tub of marrow. I was like,
oh, no.
That's an interesting Sorry. Okay, what is that?
That sounds good, though.
I know, right?
We'll put that on toast and have some greens on top. Let's have that for lunch.
Yeah.
But what did you say, though? A tub, what? A bebe?
Oh, well, I don't know, is it cavolo nero?
Yes, it's the black kale, you know, cavolo
yeah.
nero.
A cavolo nero, black kale, okay.
Yes, mm-hmm. and it, sometimes they call it dinosaur kale because it's
yes.
very, you know, bumpy on mm-hmm. it. And that's very delicious. All the kales right now and the collards, and we're always crazy about endive. Not mm-hmm. We love Belgian endive, but the real endive, and either to cook it in a soup or to make a delicious sort of wintry, bitter, you know, strong salad.
Mm.
Yeah,
I do
love
those.
That. Yeah.
I love those too.
Yeah.
So, just a little bit more time left, but now that I'm sure everyone is getting ready to cook away this Thursday or Wednesday or maybe tomorrow a little bit too, do you have any other really exciting new side dishes that you can't wait to share?
Oh, well, we have an old one that actually is a pretty delicious one,
mm-hmm.
which is, two ingredients which we think. One, we have one which is called, we call it Brian's mashed potato trick. And for your Thanksgiving mashed potatoes, what he does, I'm just going to read you this one little part
mm-hmm.
out of the book. It says, you could say he's sort of a spud specialist. His mashed potato recipe is fairly standard, but his trick is to slip tiny pats of cold butter down into and throughout the hot potatoes when they are in their serving dish. The butter melts into hidden pools buried deep in the mashed potatoes to be discovered with mm-hmm. each delicious forkful.
Oh, that is so fun. Yeah, I loved seeing that dripping effect when it's just a pat on the top, but that sounds really clever. I like that.
Mm.
And Melissa, how about you?
Yeah, we're kind of crazy for chestnuts.
Mm.
And I'm not sure if that's the other one that Christopher was
mentioning. Yeah, exactly, Melissa.
Oh, the the chestnuts, and you know, we have to confess that we're not doing the fresh chestnuts and you know, ruining our
fingernails,
manicures.
Nails. It takes too long. But what we do is we use the jarred chestnuts, and we make a stuffing, a really, you know, flavorful, delicious stuffing with that,
mm-hmm.
And there's bread crumbs and there's
onions,
those,
little pearl
The chestnuts we're cooking with all the time. As soon as it's fall time, we're cooking with them, and cipollini onions and what have you. But the starch of the chestnut is just delicious.
Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed. I haven't cooked too much with chestnuts so far, but I imagine that they lend a really, they kind of mush in the stuffing, and they lend a real creaminess. Is that what happens?
Oh, they're soft. You know, they're very, they're almost like potato. They have a, they're not grainy because they're so, you cook them, and they're just, they're delicious. They lend this starchy flavor to it. And then we put little pearl onions in also, and so you get all these different textures. Pretty delicious stuffing.
Yeah, that sounds like a great way to complement the bread. Kind of mushy, soggy, hopefully not, though, bread. No,
there's no more mushy, soggy stuffing in my life.
And what's this key to that? Just making them really stale pieces dried out to oblivion? Or?
Oh, not too much stock, too. You know, you can, there are the couple of schools of it. Some people like big pieces of bread. Other people like, you know, when I said my grandmother, she thought it was déclassé to have big pieces of bread. She liked the finest crumb. That to her was elegant. So, and you know, there was the school, like my grandmother would never say stuffing. She liked to say dressing. Because
my grandmother
did
too.
Well, the stuffing, that was considered too coarse to call it stuffing, you know, you call
it, liked it.
Even though that's what you do with it, but you stuff the bird. But it was a little more ladylike to say dressing.
Interesting. Thanks for solving that one for me. I was like, why?
Well, someone will call in with even more about that.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So we could go on and on forever here about Thanksgiving, just for starters, but. I thank you so much for sharing your wisdom here and tips, and I can't wait to try some of them out. And this book is so wonderful. So definitely everyone check out Canal House Cooks Every Day. It's one of those cookbooks that you'll love to read and savor. And are you going to come out with another cookbook with your next year's lunches or things that you eat throughout the year?
I don't know, but Canal House Cooks Lunch. Just everybody subscribe to that, and then you'll see whether what we can.
You'll see what we're up to.
Yeah.
Okay. So Canal. We
do have another book of the series coming in the spring that will volume number 8, and that will be adding to the year in Italy. So there's always something coming from us. Always, always. So that's the fun part.
I can't wait. Thank you so much for sharing it, then.
Oh, thank you, Kathy, so much. And I hope that you and everybody has very happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much. All right, do check out CanalHouseCooksLunch.com. And thanks, Melissa and Christopher, for being on the show. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
All right, eat well. Be happy. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.